as a parent, you are promising to raise your child in the faith. This is the bare
literally
minimum. This is the basis of our faith, of Source and Summit. You will attend, you know, you are the primary person. You are the primary teacher of the faith as the parent.
Yes.
We are secondary.
The domestic church,
not,
right?
Right. We are not the primary teacher, pastors, honors of the, that's a technical term, pastor
like
honors of the faith, right? It's the parents, and it's your job first.
And like, you promised.
And you promised this.
When you got them baptized.
Right, right. So it's more just, so you're going to continue that promise. And as we're engaging in these major life sacraments, you're also promising, like, we're not just a sacrament factory. Get your sacraments and leave.
Yeah.
Right.
We actually want to transform your lives. We want you to come into a relationship with Jesus.
Right.
And want to empower you. So when the devil comes after you, you're equipped.
Welcome to the Huntley Leadership Podcast, helping leaders be a positive catalyst in the people they support, the organizations they serve, and the communities they live. This podcast will make you think, laugh, and grit your teeth with new determination to make your parish or business a place of transformation, passion, and purpose. If you're still breathing, you are powered for impact.
So I'm excited to have this conversation and welcome Katie Fredrickson to the podcast today, a principal of a school here locally.
Hi, Ron. Great to be here.
Tell us a little bit about your school and
Well, we're a growing school in Northwest Indiana, in St. John, Indiana. We're St. John the Evangelist. It's an old school, in 1846.
Come on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's crazy.
You know, this is only my third year as principal of this school. I would have to say that this is a real Catholic school.
What do you mean by that?
The students have to learn BCTs, right?
Which is
basic Catholic teachings. They also have to go up and show that they know those BCTs. But there's a permeation in all things we do that's Catholic, and that's ingrained in the culture of the school. Me coming in as an outsider came in to, I mean, for example, in other schools I've worked with, for example, just in the staff, they would do Secret Santas.
Yes,
the person and SJE is the Advent Angel. Like, that's how Catholic this school is, even with the staff. Like, they call it Advent Angel.
Yeah,
they're
nothing
accurate.
Christmas
like, it's
until
accurate.
It's Christmas.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it just, the faith permeates all subjects, it's not just an additional subject added on into the basic curriculum.
Gotcha.
And I walked into that. And that really is, I think, from the direction of Father Mulata for so many years being that is something very, when our students leave SJE, they it's a strong academic formation, but they also go to like other high schools that are, you know, Catholic high schools, and that freshman year theology class, the teachers, and we've heard from the teachers at those private schools, like, wow, SJE kids already know the content, because of how strong that formation is.
Isn't that fascinating? Now, did you grow up in Catholic schools?
I did.
Okay.
I did.
What was your experience? Like, I didn't, because they don't have them back home where I'm from. And so it wasn't, we had religious education.
And I can't speak for all. I went to school in the 80s and 90s, mainly the early 90s. And my interpretation of Catholic education was more be nice.
Yeah.
And then the sacraments, more like, you know, big lofty words I never understood, like come to the table and the Eucharist, we're a family meal. It's just like kind of, to me, kind of hokey, watered down felt banner stuff that I really was never taught the meat and potatoes of our faith. My mom was a devout Catholic and she would teach me things, but I extreme eye rolled them because that's my mom.
Extreme eye roll.
So I, I didn't really take my faith too seriously, except that it's things I had to do. And then my Catholic, you know, school was just be nice. So be nice and you have to do these things, right?
Yeah.
And so as an adult, when I started to, because I taught theology before I was a principal, and, when I started really looking into my faith and learning all the things I was never taught, I got a little mad that I wasn't taught it.
Hmm.
You know, I have...
was it that you weren't taught it or that you didn't listen?
Or that I wasn't paying attention.
Okay.
That is a meme. There's a meme that says, I never learned that in school. Yes, you did. You were talking. I probably was talking, right? Yeah. So it could have been. So no hate on my Catholic upbringing. But I do think there was a lot of, there's a watered down that happened in the 80s and 90s in Catholic education. Me personally, I think that it was watered down faith that was passed on.
Okay. Fair enough. And so I want to talk today a little bit about being a principal. And I want to talk about it because I know how hard it is. Now I say, I don't know. I'm not a Catholic principal. I haven't even gone to a Catholic school, but just in the coaching that I've done around the world, I often have conversations at some point with the principal. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of expectations on you guys. And so I'd love to talk a little bit for all the other principals out there, or maybe the people that, you know, just to be able to get some insight into what's it like being a principal. What was it like coming into it? Where were the struggles or disappointments for you? And what did you have to persevere?
So in Catholic education as a whole, anyone wears a lot of hats.
Okay.
You know, public education has more supports and people, like you have curriculum coaches and data coaches and like things like that. Catholic education doesn't always have that, right? So you have your teachers wear many hats, your aides wear even more hats, right? Your school secretary wears a lot of hats, and your principal wears a lot of different hats. Mm. And it's a juggling act of all these plates up in the air of the things that you are trying to keep together, all also adding that faith component that you are making sure that, you know, that faith is being passed on in a way that isn't watered down, right? That is true. That is, and that all the decisions you made are made in that lens, in that frame.
So
when you're juggling a safety plate, right? You're juggling the safety plate, the curriculum adoption plate. I gotta help sift through adoptions of curriculums that are gonna be aligned with
the
that faith.
Plate.
This is gonna be a positive show, man. We're gonna stay positive.
This is gonna be real. This is a real conversation. Right? No, I get it. But so you would have known that by being a Catholic teacher in schools beforehand, but what surprised you when you became a principal? Or maybe nothing. Maybe it's like, no, it's exactly what I thought.
No, I knew
what
I knew that it was going to be a lot put on my plate for sure.
Okay.
I did know that. And I actually did warn my family that me taking this position means that it's going to be less of me being able to do some of the things that they were used to me doing as a teacher.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. So it's a heck of a sacrifice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially on the families.
Right.
Especially if you have smaller children, like more people, I can see why they wait until they're a little bit older to become a principal. Because I have a second grader and a fifth grader.
Mm-hmm.
And it is hard to juggle my littles. And they go to work with me, but then it's always bring your kid to work day.
It's always bring
I'm their principal and their mom, you know?
Yeah.
I'm walking down the hallway trying to get something and my second grader's running up and has been giving me a hug. I'm like, oh, line. It's your principal. Go sit, go. You know? So it's a juggling
That's
act
cute.
For sure. Yeah.
I didn't get to hug my principal in elementary school. That's kind of cute.
I do get hugs a lot.
Oh, do you?
From kids, yeah.
Well, that's beautiful. And so how is being a principal caused you to evolve, whether it's your faith, whether it's your leadership skills? Tell me a little bit about that.
I think it forces me to trust God, even though I don't understand. There's been a lot of situations where I just don't understand. And I've had to wrestle with trust, big time trust in God. I still don't get it. I still don't get his plan. There's a lot of things I just don't understand,
but
I've had to surrender. Well, just, you know, some things are very personal, but why just certain things happen to the, you know, cause you're also the person that has to deal with tragedy in like if a family, you know, has we have
we
have 440, we have 440 students, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be people in that building that experience big time tragedies. We had one year where we had a family with a house fire, two families lose a parent within just a few months.
Wow.
You know, and we had to rally together as a community, but that is a lot. Where you start to like, you have access to more traumatic things, right? To more lives, because the more you have access to those things, plus you are that authority figure. You're that person that is
people look to,
right? That leader or and within staff members too, sick staff members who lose a parent, staff members who are struggling with things with their own families and their own, you know, and you're juggling that act, knowing all those personal things and being, you're a confidential person.
Yes. Right?
You have to keep that
in
within. So it's just a wrestling too with trusting God and then praying. You know, there were so many times with that 1 year, we had three traumatic events, like I said, within a few months. So then the next school year, we started with a teacher retreat where it taught the teachers how to pray with someone in the moment, because we experienced so much loss and tragedy that if a child's standing in front of you telling you something's going on in their home, you should be able to just put your hand on their shoulder and say, can we pray about that right now? And were our teachers equipped to do that? And I kicked myself because I had those opportunities and I did it. I had a parent who was going to undergo a major surgery. She was crying in my office that she was worried about how her kids were going to take that surgery. And it was the one time I said, can we pray about that? And I prayed, like, why didn't I do this for all those other tragedies? Like, I had people who lost loved ones sitting in my office, you know? So
beautiful.
It taught me to pray in the moment, but also trust God, but also think, geez, wow, there's a lot of hurt.
Were you always like, you say that to pray with people in the moment, and it sounds like that's something you've gotten comfortable with. What changed in your personal life that you went from, because most of us as Catholics grew up culturally Catholic, but not particularly useful. What changed? What impact?
I know, this is like full circle for you, probably the Alpha program. My husband and I ran an Alpha program out of our parish and it was very uncomfortable in that Holy Spirit weekend is when you pray with people.
Sure.
And I had, as the person who was facilitating it, had to be one of the first ones to teach people how to do it. I'm like, and my husband's a convert, so he was more like open to it. And I'm like, this stuff's weird. I'm Catholic. This is weird.
We don't. The only priests do this.
This is weird. What am I doing? You know, so it was very uncomfortable the first few times we did that. And then, we weren't parishioners here at SJE at the time, but we eventually became parishioners here. And they had a prayer ministry. Mm-hmm. And my husband was all like, let's, we were asked to be. And I'm like, oh, man, I got to do this again. it's very uncomfortable. So that's why I knew that teachers were going to be uncomfortable. There was times when I was a theology teacher and I had students, I had a few students who would seek my guidance on a regular basis, would come to me during my prep hours and talk to me about their lives, you know, and there were a few times in that moment where I did Alpha with my kids.
Oh,
and there
nice.
Was the praying, there's the prayer episode, the Alpha youth one. And I taught them all how to pray over each other. So these kids expected me to do that.
It's like, they didn't know you were uncomfortable and you weren't going
to
tell them.
But no, I told them. Oh no, oh, okay. I told them, it's weird. Let's all say it. It's weird. And I said that to the teachers too. I'm like, y'all, it's fine. It's weird. It's uncomfortable. And I could tell you how many times I was going to kick myself over like praying over somebody. But I still think it can be awkward, but I'm getting better. But yeah, it took a long time. But Alpha actually helped that.
But Alpha is one of the tools
I would say that's my gateway.
Yeah, it was for me too. Like we grew up, I remember praying with the kids all the time when they were really young. Every time they had a cold or something, we'd lay hands and pray because again, we learned it in Alpha.
Yeah, we taught our kids. I think it's going to be normal for my own children, but it definitely wasn't normal for me.
Right. And I remember one time, kids were playing in the backyard. My son was really young and all of a sudden I heard somebody wailing, somebody got hurt. And as a dad, you just keep washing the dishes. And next thing you know, there's a knock on the door and I look out the door and I don't see anybody. And I look down, I see these two little kids, my son and his friend who's a couple of years older than him, and his friend's crying. And so I opened the door and Kirsten said, Dad, Kyle hurt his knee. And I said, oh, yeah. He said, will you pray with him? And I'm thinking, no.
Don't make it weird.
But I didn't want my son to know that.
Yeah.
I felt like a hypocrite. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, I only do that in a home where nobody can see us.
Right.
But he's like, no, Dad prays with people all the time and we trust in Jesus and God heals. And I'm thinking, do I really believe this?
Yeah.
Like you think I do.
That's funny that way. He puts us in situations like that's embarrassing.
And so I said to the little fella, Kyle, can I pray with you?
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, yep. He's crying. And I said, can I put my hand on your knee? He said, yep. And so Christian put his hand on his shoulder. I put his hand on his knee, and I just said, "Dear Jesus, please heal Kyle's knee and help him to feel better so he can continue playing with his buddies."
Aww.
And Christian says, "Amen." And I looked at Kyle and said, "How's your knee?" And he bent it a few times and he said, "It's good."
Now, was Kyle any faith?
I have no idea.
Oh, you don't know?
No idea. So I had to ask for permission. But it was just so beautiful because it was difficult. But as Catholics, if we're not, and it's so cool that you're teaching your students to do that with each other and teaching your teachers to do that.
Well, that's in baby steps, right? We want our staff to be comfortable with it first. So that was the idea, was you be comfortable with this first, and then we can start having our students do it. So we're in really small stages with that.
But I love the vision for it, right? Because how are we going to be useful in building the kingdom of God if we literally can't even pray with each other? Like, it blows my mind that we can spend a whole life going to church and be borderline useless when it comes to ministering God's grace into other people. Like, for heaven's sakes, doesn't make any sense. So good on you, like those baby steps. Love that. Yeah. And so, you know, as you share what you're sharing, and thank you for it, by the way, I'm mindful of, like, you know, working with bishops. I love working with clergy because I know how I learn how hard it is, and I learn the difficult things that they face. And so here they're trying to manage these things, but they're getting lambasted and judged like crazy when they don't live up to individuals' expectations. And I think to myself, if you knew what I knew, you'd be far gentler in how you approach these people. And I know in schools too, it's got to be the same thing. Like, well, geez, I pay for this. And so how dare you not live up to all my expectations?
Well,
I'm guessing.
That's true. And the thing is that confidentiality is going to merit you not being able to tell the whole picture of a story.
Right.
And people are just really ruthless when it comes to that. Mm. They don't know the full picture. Therefore, they're making judgments on things without all the pieces.
Yeah.
And not only are they doing that, they're going out into their circles and they're saying things that are completely false.
Yeah.
And then it's a very difficult
thing to maneuver. And you can't defend yourself because of the confidentiality piece.
No, you can't.
So what would you want people to know that kind of get a little...
I think that we need to acknowledge in education in general, whether it's Catholic education or public or education itself, educator, administrator goes out with a negative intent. Mm-hmm. We need to assume positive intent. We need to assume that when we make decisions, that there is a positive intention for what someone's doing, even if it's not right or how we'd want them to do it, but they're doing it with an intention that they think it's what's best for a student, right? They think it's what's best for the school. And that if we go through that assumption, if we operate out of an assumption of positive intent, then we shouldn't be coming at someone with a negative, like, you're against my child. Mm-hmm. You're against me as a teacher. Mm-hmm. You're against me, you know, when decisions are made, right?
Judging their character,
that idea,
judging their ability.
Well, not just that, or just you target. No one went into education to target kids, right?
Yeah.
Like, so we need to assume positive intent. Mm-hmm. That should be the number one thing. And also just go into all things with knowing that you might not have the full truth, even from your own child, because they're not that they're a liar. They could, they could be. Kids lie.
They do.
Or it could be their perception of an issue. So that we just always want to operate out of that assuming positive intent. So when we react to something, it's probably not the full truth in the first place. And maybe that person is operating and made that decision because they thought it was what's best. But if they knew the full picture, maybe not, right?
Yes. Yeah. I wonder too, I remember hearing this perspective before and it really helped me. Oftentimes, in the absence of trust, we often look down.
Yeah, right.
But when we trust, we give people the benefit of the doubt.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's like, I know Katie, I don't like that situation. It seems like that was a bad decision, but I trust her.
Right.
I know she's intelligent and capable. Therefore, I'm sure there's things I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to approach it very differently.
Right.
But if I don't trust you,
mm-hmm.
then I'm coming at it as if you're incompetent or you lack character or you
have more ammo
to
say against.
I feel more justified to
attack you. I feel more justified in my feelings that, I knew you never liked her, or I knew you never liked them or why they do what they're, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I knew they were targeting, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's tricky, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So is part of like, yeah, I don't even know. Like it must be like building trust. Like I've been to SJE, St. John the Evangelist Church here 1 year when it was the beginning of the school year. Mm-hmm. And so I went to the assembly where the parents had to go and you and gave some presentations and Father Sammy was there as well. And it was really neat to be there to kind of set the tone for the year. That's like, do all schools do that? I'm guessing maybe they do.
But yeah, they all have some form of a back to school night where, expectations are set, questions can be answered, they meet the teacher, they go and see how the classroom is going to be run and what to expect for the school year.
Okay. So are the expectations for parents bringing their kids to SJE school the same as they would be anywhere else, or how are they different?
Well, I wouldn't say that. Okay. Because again, we're a Catholic school.
No, I mean, compared to other Catholic schools.
Oh, compared to other Catholic schools?
What are the expectations?
I would say that this particular school is the only one I know of that has a covenant that parents have to sign. And in that covenant, they are promising to take their child to church, on a regular basis, like how it's supposed to, and that they, and that's just with their parishioner status too. Have you talked? I don't know.
No, not at all. No, so it's all new to all our listeners.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So there is I was a parent first before I was the principal here.
Okay.
And I remember coming home with the covenant, like, cause my husband and I take our faith very seriously. And I was like, look at this covenant. They have a covenant here. So that is something definitely. So
does every parent look at that and go, look at that?
Oh, it's wonderful. I highly doubt it. Right. Yeah. So it's this expectation of you're going to take your child to, to mass every Sunday and every holy day of obligation. We do have a difference in our tuition rates between an active parishioner rate and a standard rate tuition.
Really?
And the active parishioner rate is maintained by being an active parishioner at
the parish. Which means what?
Which means attending Mass on
Christmas
a regular...
Christmas and Easter?
Attending Mass every Sunday, holy day of obligation. And they do have an attendance policy at the parish.
So they measure it.
For their parish partners, for their parishioners.
So they get them to sign a covenant and they hold them accountable.
Yes. And they do receive, check-ins. And sometimes it's, because that's a parishioner policy, right? So and they use an envelope system. You don't have to put anything in the envelopes, but that's just how it's monitored.
Yeah.
And they check that attendance. Now, for the kids, they have an additional thing that they have to fill out, a mass sheet.
Okay.
So, but again, like if a child goes to mass at another church on Sunday, they just bring in their bulletin, to show that they had gone to mass somewhere else. But it's just that whole idea of you go to mass on Sundays, you go to mass on holy days of obligation.
So let's unpack this a little bit. Okay. Cause I'm sure people are listening thinking, don't tell me what to do. I'm a Catholic. I don't have to go to church.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sending my kids to a Catholic school. Don't tell me what to do. And so it's like this micromanagement, like,
well, they can push, have their children attend the school and they pay the standard rate. It also does affect their sacraments. But that would be something that you could talk to. You could have Amy Hagen on the show and you talk to her.
Well, that's
She's
a good
the one
idea.
That monitors all those things. Like, I don't know the whole process.
What's the
I just
why
know the
behind
covenant.
It. Like, what's the why? Like, again, I'm sure people are listening going, are you guys out of your mind? Like, most Catholic schools I go to, Katie, like globally, the number one problem facing the local parish is that almost virtually none, that didn't make any sense. Hardly any of the parents actually take their kids to church.
Right.
Like 95% of them in 100% of the countries that I've traveled in, they literally don't go to church. And you're saying here, you get parents to sign a covenant and you actually measure whether or not they're showing up and their kids, if they're going to get the date.
And they have to meet with Father, to talk about what's going on. And, sometimes, like, especially with the parish side, with parishioner side, that it could be that someone was sick, someone's going through a difficult time. And so they're able to actually, with that policy, minister to people with certain,
beautiful
issues too. I think that it's just, we take it seriously here. And, I think that attracts people that takes their faith seriously too. Mm-hmm. Right.
Because I've heard, because I was in a leadership team meeting with the team the other day and they're talking about the waiting list for certain grades. Like, it's like, well, that's cool. Mm-hmm. So it's not like this position of accountability mm-hmm. is driving people away. It might be driving some away, but it's right. actually attracting people mm-hmm. because this church itself seems to be very missional and intentional right. in right. where they're going. And mm-hmm. and that includes how the policies of the school.
If you're going to attend, I mean, that's pretty much what Father Sammy says. Like, if you're going to be a parishioner at SJE, mm-hmm. we want you to, you're going to go to Mass because that's the Sorenson Summit.
Yeah, we're Catholic.
No, we're Catholic.
And
we're
so again, so what's the why? So I'm hearing behavior. We want your behavior, but what's the why?
Well, gosh, I should have brought the contract, the covenant. I believe it speaks directly to baptismal promises. Okay. As a parent, you are promising to raise your child in the faith. This is the bare
Literally.
Minimum. This is the basis of our faith, the source and summit. You will attend, you know, you are the primary person. You're the primary teacher of the faith as the parent.
Yes.
We are secondary.
The domestic church,
not,
right?
Right. We are not the primary teacher, pastors, honors of the, that's a technical term, pastor
like
honors of the faith, right? It's yeah. the parents and it's your job first.
And like, you promised.
And you promised this.
When you got
baptized.
Them baptized.
Right, right. So it's more just, so you're going to continue that promise. And as we're engaging in these major life sacraments, you're mm-hmm. also promising, like,
yeah,
we're not just a sacrament factory, get your sacraments and leave,
yeah.
right?
We actually want to transform your lives. We want you to come into a relationship mm-hmm. with Jesus.
Right.
And want to empower you. So when the devil comes after you, mm-hmm. you're equipped because
right.
he's coming after you, kids.
Right.
He's coming after your kids.
Yeah, for sure.
And if they don't know Jesus.
The family itself, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's so beautiful. I wanted to highlight that. I mean, I knew the answer, but I want to pull them out of you.
Well, it didn't come from me. It's like I stepped into a Catholic culture. I didn't have to. That's, you know, sometimes
yeah, no, I get
like,
it.
Oh man, this school needs to work on our Catholic culture. You
yeah,
know,
yeah.
it's, that is not.
What's it feel like to be a part of that as an administrator of a school? Like, I know, what's it like to step into that kind of culture with the school
and
the church?
It is refreshing. That part is refreshing because it's done for you, right? Because it automatically happens from years of that being the expectation. So just kind of stepped right into that. That's great.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I just commend you because, you know, I know for us when we were kind of wrestling with our sacramental factory that's in Canada, in our area of the world, we started measuring how many people who come to the sacraments who weren't coming to church before mm-hmm. actually stick around. Because we did everything we could to be nice, be kind, be welcoming, to be mm-hmm. non-judgmental, to be generous, to really be faithful. And then we'd measure how many of them were still in the church 6 months later.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how many were?
Mm-mm.
Zero.
Zero.
Zero people, if they weren't already fully committed to church.
They weren't already going.
They would come to the sacraments and mm-hmm. they would leave again and they wouldn't come back. And so it's like, this is ritualized apostasy. We literally know full well they have no intention on living up to any of the promises they're saying before God and before everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And we do it anyway.
Mm.
And we felt like we weren't leading very well.
Yeah.
Like we
like
felt
hypocrites.
Right. Yeah. And we know it.
Mm-hmm.
And we get up there and do it anyway. And I remember a pastor at the time, he couldn't sleep at night because he really felt the call to go and make disciples of all nations. Sacramentalizing people without bringing them to a personal relationship with Jesus was not doing the very things that Jesus was calling us to. And
I
so
I do struggle with that though.
Okay, go ahead.
Debate it. I know, no.
Because I know other people do too.
Because I struggle with that because I have many friends who grew up Catholic mm-hmm. but don't practice.
Yes.
But they're still getting their children baptized.
Mm-hmm.
Should we be denying them access?
But we never denied access.
But so that's my question. So like.
But right? what we did was so, we said, do you know what you're doing? And the most part is, no, we didn't. My grandmother's going to shoot me if I don't get the kid
exactly.
baptized.
Exactly. And that's where they're operating out of a total sense of ignorance because, again.
Cultural Catholics,
in
right?
80s and 90s, it was mm-hmm. watered down. Be nice.
Yeah.
Be
that
nice.
That was our primary value.
And
sacrament, be nice.
Sacramental factory, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that's across the board. This is my.
That's right.
My specific example
yeah.
of
Absolutely.
My life, right?
Yep.
My, but. So I would hear, again, so this is me trying to be delicate, right? So I would hear a friend talk about how difficult it was for her to get her baby baptized and all the stupid things you have to go through the church. And I'm sitting here like, you want to, like, I didn't say this, mm. you know, why do you want to get, you don't even practice. Why do you want to, right? Mm-hmm. And then the mom also, who does practice, maybe saying things like, why does the church just make it so hard for these young people? This is why the young people are leaving the church, because the church just makes it so hard for them to get these sacraments. And I'm just like, again, delicate, trying to bite my
tongue.
Very
pastoral.
Just like, but you don't, why? What's the point?
What is
baptism to you? And what are you doing? Why do you do it? Is this a just in case? Just in case the whole let's be nice people thing doesn't work out, we at least got baptism out of the way to, like, you know, so that it's...
That's your passport stamped and...
Right.
Yeah.
Like, do you know what you're actually... Because
and
even
our experience
me
is people don't.
Right, right. And the, you know... Looking back, I don't know if I would have picked the godparents I picked, because it was more just a, let's go through this. You're really close to me. It's not like, you know, even my own self, like, because I wasn't evolved in my faith at the time, because it was just be nice.
Yeah.
Like, and your godparents that you pick are your close friends or family, and or who's next in line that didn't get picked to be godparent yet in our family. You know what I mean? And I see that a lot. And Where do you draw the line? Somebody who wants to get married in the church. Mm-hmm. Like, again, those same good friends that don't practice want to get married in the church. Mm-hmm. Should they be denied that?
Mm-hmm. And again,
right?
So let's clarify that a bit, because we never denied, but we educated. Yeah. And then we said,
I got to go through all your classes. No, I'm going to go to this church, so that'll just marry me.
Oh.
Do you see what I mean?
But that's the point. This is the church I'm going to go to when I don't go to church. It's like, well, then go, because we're not about, we want you, because you're being, what is baptism? You're being initiated into a family of faith.
Right.
Do you want to be a part of that family? No.
Well, then
baptism's not for you.
Right.
And so, but we'd educate them on that, and then we give them the choice. And it's like, hey, if you want pictures in the church, we'll consecrate your child. We'll do a little service after. We'll pray over your kids, and we'll ask God to bless them and your family. And if you ever want your children to be baptized into a family of faith that you're a member of, we would love to help you do that.
Yeah.
And a lot of them would just choose, thank you for having this conversation with me.
Now, would they walk away?
And they would get there. Some of them would get there. They'd walk away. Some of them would go to other churches because I want to go to a church where I can get my kid done and not have to go to church. And we'd say, done. Okay. Medium, well, or rare. Like, what do you mean done?
Right. So when I was an eighth grade homeroom teacher a few years ago, a long time ago, my, one of the boys, it was time to do confirmation. And, you know, we've been doing this for how many years, right? Eighth grade confirmation. They actually do it in ninth grade here, by the way, but eighth grade confirmation. So this boy just, and his parents took it, you know, he's like, I don't want to get confirmed. And you would think, clutch your pearls. Like, oh, how dare you? And he's like, I don't know. This is something.
It's a big deal.
This is a big deal. I would rather have that. Like, where a child was sitting there like, I don't want to say yes to something I'm not sure about.
Yeah.
Like, good for you.
Right.
That you actually are taking the sacrament seriously enough to respect it enough to say, I don't want it at this time.
Yeah.
Now, whatever happened to him, I don't know.
Yeah.
But
isn't that beautiful?
But I thought that I was actually like, where a lot of people were like, I can't believe that. I was like, that's actually really cool. Mm. He's taking it seriously. Like, I don't know if I want to do this right now.
Isn't that beautiful? And in our context back home, we didn't have Catholic schools. And so many Catholic schools, well, you're at grade whatever, so this is what you do. Mm-hmm. We didn't have that pressure. Mm-hmm. We just had people that didn't go to church, bring their kids, and then leave again. And again, we weren't judging them. Mm-hmm. We wanted to evangelize them. We wanted them to bring them into a relationship with Christ. But what we did is we started counting, and we realized we're literally batting zero. Mm. So instead of continuing to play games and showing up and literally missing every single time and not taking any responsibility for it, we started shifting the way we did things and holding ourselves accountable to making disciples.
Right.
And a lot more people walked away, but the people that didn't walk away engaged. They came into a relationship with Christ, and their whole family came to faith.
Right.
And so our numbers went through the roof, not in terms of quantity, but in terms of actually making disciples, which is the mission.
Right. You know, we talked about it, I think, before the show started, just about this, you know, what's happening, this future of the church.
Mm.
I think God's doing a major purge.
Mm.
A quality over quantity, right? That this cultural Catholicism, this I just got to get things done, this box checking, right, is it's like fading away, right? Mm-hmm. That what's a rebirth, right? A revitalization in taking it seriously, actually knowing what you're getting yourself into. Mm-hmm. It was not too long ago, Father Mike Schmitz and Bishop Barron and Dr. Jordan Peterson all did a sit down, and Father Mike talked about this. I don't remember if it was like a poll or something that went through. It was like a type of Christian or Catholic that was just a passed down, like a cultural Catholicism thing. Like God's distant. Mm-hmm. I know he helps me out sometimes. It's not a personal relationship thing, but like that each generation has passed that down. Actually, we're just in a generation now that is being forthcoming and honest about how they're feeling.
Yeah,
it was really good. It was really good. And what he did was say that just people are actually craving genuine and are actually craving authenticity.
We're in an authenticity age.
And that we're just now being honest. And so these numbers are reflecting where these people aren't going because they're, again, why? Like they want that, you know, that genuine and authentic and not just, I always had to, or because I, you know, that's that cultural thing. I have to go through the motions. It's just more of a
being nice. And that's why,
and if that's all it is,
I don't think anybody's going to accuse Father Sammy of just being nice. I don't
think that's I'm saying, like, if that's all it is, then why do all these extra rules and regulations? So you got to give them some, that makes sense, right?
Yeah.
So we're in a unique opportunity for quality versus quantity. And that I think it's a rebirth, right? I think it's a good opportunity. I think it's positive.
I hope so. And, you know, you talk about that. If I could just add to that, because that's a beautiful image. And hopefully that quality is, and if you're listening to this and this goes double for me, you're thinking, yeah, I'm one of those quality Catholics. Like, look at me. It's like, well, then you better work way harder and be way more fruitful than everybody else. Because if God's given you a big shovel, he expects you to dig a big hole. It's, you know, don't stand around and you know, pat yourself on the back and say how holy I am. Holiness and mission go hand in hand. And so my hope is it's not holiness. And I know we're saying the same thing because I know you. It's that holiness for mission. Like lay your life down in love and service of others. That's how you honor God and show you're a disciple. It's not by how much you know.
I mean, you got to think 12 guys changed the world. So if God is decreasing our church, he wants us to change the world again, you know? And I think that we have a unique opportunity in our culture that our culture does not know Christ. Mm-hmm. You know, you could have might be in phases. They think they do, but they don't know. This culture does not.
They don't even know them academically. They literally don't know.
This is now we are on it, you know? So if we are on that mission to create disciples who make disciples, right? That's what Father Sammy says. And our mission statement as a school is to learn, live and love as Jesus taught us, right? If we actually take these things seriously, cultivate the truth in these kids, right?
Yes.
Our next generation, we're sending out into the world missionary disciples to a world that knows no faith at all. Mm. And I think that's actually kind of a cool thing. It's like a new territory.
So exciting. I'm so grateful for the work that you do. And thanks for spending some time talking about, you know, what it's like being a principal. And I think that some of the insights that you shared, I think that goes true for politicians. I think that goes true for bishops. I think that
leader, assume positive intent first, right? Yeah. You might not agree with certain decisions. That's rightly so, right?
And it's okay.
But
to
know
question.
That you don't have the big picture, right? And assuming positive intent is the number one place to operate from.
Yeah, and be responsible to yourself and to others. I remember we went through a really difficult season in the pharmaceutical industry, and we had a couple of bosses in the organization that were pretty tyrannical in their approach, and we definitely did not share the same values. And it was so easy because our culture was starting to disintegrate before our very eyes. Mm-hmm. And it's so easy to get on the pity party and lament and lambaste them. And it was very natural and very easy. And because you're hurt, you're afraid, you're lamenting the loss, you're uncertain of the future. And, but we realized, and I remember me and my friend Curtis made a pact, like, we're not going to let each other stay in negativity. Mm-hmm. And so it's okay to suffer. It's okay to go through this stuff, but we're not a victim to this. We're choosing to stay. If we want to go somewhere else, we can go somewhere else. Mm-hmm. If we're going to stay, we're going to hold each other accountable to being positive mm-hmm. and to find ways to be grateful, mm-hmm. even in the midst of this uncertainty and suffering. I was just so grateful to have him in my life because although I have positivity in my top five strength themes, I can be negative too when I'm under mm-hmm. threat and under attack.
Yeah, yeah. And I throw a good pity party myself.
Yeah, you're good at it too. Congrats.
Then I snap myself out of it because then it's time to.
It's important, right? And we need each mm-hmm. other. That's what community is so great for. Right. It's like, let's hold each other to the highest standards and mm-hmm. be able to listen and be with each other when we're suffering, but just continue to lift our head high, keep our eyes focused on Jesus, new great things. And so. Again, thank you for all you do as a disciple. And I, as we wind up, I'd love to send people over to what you and your husband, Bobby, are doing.
Because,
so tell us a little bit about that as we wind up.
So before I became a principal, when I was a theology teacher, actually over COVID, my husband and I started a podcast called The Catholic Couple.
Yeah.
It's year three of doing this now. And we also have a strong Instagram presence.
Yes, you do.
So you can link up, whatever in there. And it's really, he does a lot of the content creating because I don't have time.
Yeah, you don't.
We have really good conversations and with each other, but then also we've been doing a lot more things with guests, which is really cool. So,
good for you.
I think tonight we actually have like an NFL player on.
Come on.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Really excited.
That'll be so fun.
Yeah. And you know what? Like, again, like, it's really a lot him. And then I just come on for the podcast. So sometimes I'm like, who's this? Oh, what? So then it's like, it looks like it's so new to me, but it really is. Like, I'm totally surprised by these people.
Isn't that fun?
I literally just sat down like, okay, what's this? What are we doing? Yeah. No, it's a really good, he's a convert and he's crazy. And he,
very zealous,
very into
spirit
his faith
of and teaching, it forced, like the charism of teaching.
Right. And it forced me to take my faith seriously. And, you know, we really do. We geek out over things and we have good conversations and they're relevant and on various topics like relationships and parenting a lot. Yeah. But then we also have guests. So it's depending on that guest.
Yeah.
You know what we talk about, but. Yeah.
Love it. So I'll put all that in the show notes. And again, thank you for all you're doing.
All right.
I appreciate that. And thank you for listening. It's so fun to have this conversation. And for all of you educators out there in the Catholic school system, thank you. I know it's not easy, but the more honest we can be with one another and collaborate with our principal to say, what is our purpose? How do we come alongside of our parish and live the same values, live the same mission, and try to do what we can to grow in the integrity of that peace together? I just want you to know that we're grateful. And we also realize how hard it is. So let's support our teachers. Let's support our principals. Let's support our pastors and be a part of doing something great for God's glory. Until next time.
I want to encourage you as you lead this week, be faithful to God and generous to others. See you next time. And remember, if you're still breathing, you are powered for impact.